voice of Jack Davey, a voice that spanned the great years of radio entertainment in Australia, a voice to introduce the 1964 edition of Fair Dinkum Variety, 30 years of wireless, from cat's whisker to cathode tube.
Wishing will make it so. Just keep on wishing, and care will go. Dreamers tell us dreams come true. It's no mistake, and wishes are the dreams we dream when we're away. The curtain on night will pass.
The first systematic broadcasting service in Australia was launched at 8 o'clock on the night of November the 23rd, 1923. Station 2SB, Sydney, was on the air, and the era of wireless entertainment had begun. For the first time, audiences were being pursued into their very own homes. Soon, 2SB adopted a new call sign, 2BL. Soon, more stations were opened, 2FC, 3AR, and 6WF. By 1929, the wireless had become a part of our daily life. Listening audiences had increased tenfold in 5 years, and the Australian Broadcasting Company was formed.
Station 3LO Melbourne, Australian Broadcasting Company Limited, supplying the National Broadcasting Service of Australia and transmitting on 371 metres.
That was the voice of Frank Hatherley. On July the 1st, 1932, the Australian Broadcasting Commission was set up by Act of Parliament. One of the artists on our opening night was the singer of Wishing a Moment Ago, Jack Davey. The ABC's present Assistant Director of Light Entertainment, Bruce Weber, recalls a sequel to that inaugural broadcast.
Jack Davey sang for us on July the 1st, 1932, the day the Australian Broadcasting Commission took over from the former Australian Broadcasting Company. The transmission log for that date carries the entry, J. Davey, crooner, and beside it his fee, 1 guinea. 25 years later, when I was a television producer, I rang Jack and asked him if he could remember the song he sang on that first broadcast. Oh, of course, he said. It was I Can't Give You Anything But Love. Well, I then asked him if he'd be willing to sing the same tune on my television program, which was commemorating the anniversary. Despite the fact that in the intervening years, Jack had had little association with the commission and had made his name in the big quiz shows on commercial networks, he readily agreed, and he flung himself enthusiastically into a hard grind of rehearsals for this live television appearance. After he'd sung the number, and Jack was quite emotionally moved by this reminder of his early years in show business, I'd arranged that the general manager of the ABC, Mr. Charles Moses, should join him in front of camera and thank Jack for his appearance. Well, in the course of his thanks, Mr. Moses made reference to Jack's increased status as an artist since his previous appearance with us, and in view of this and the increased cost of living in the interim, he presented him with a check for his services which was exactly double the sum received in 1932, namely 2 guineas. Well, this was manna for Jack Davey's razor-sharp wit, and in the ensuing few minutes there followed some brilliant spontaneous humour which producers, I know, would have paid a lot of money to have had scripted for them. The story doesn't quite finish there. For some months later, Jack Davey rang me up and asked me to get the ABC's accountants off his back. It appeared that their concern was to know when he intended cashing the check. His failure was mucking up the records. Jack's answer was typical. "Tell them never," he said. "It's currently in a gold frame on my lounge room wall."
And here's how Jack Davey sounded in 1932, in this rare recording he made with Murray Gilman's orchestra. The song was written by an Australian, Noel Judd.
I've got a new song, another blues song, but it's not because I'm feeling blue. Goodbye depression, I've got possession of a happiness entirely new. But the reason for this happiness I'll leave to you to guess. Young men gay and sporty, fat men over 40, We love the cosmopolitan blue. Men 6 feet and taller, men 4 feet and smaller. Don't you wish that you were in our shoes? Thin men, fat men, giant men and flat men, normal men and crooners on the air. We're admired and our happiness inspired by that something so completely new and rare. You've heard our exclamation about this new creation, these blues that you will never want to lose. And with the coming season, you'll soon find out the reason what are these cosmopolitan blues.
Listeners to the wireless in 1932 heard the excitement of the opening of the Sydney Harbour Bridge, which event inspired a topical ditty recorded by Len Maurice and Cyril James of 2GB under the names of Quip and Quirk.
Hello. Is that Colonel Campbell?
Yes. Who's that?
Oh, this is Mr. Lang. Oh, Colonel Campbell.
Yes, Mr. Lang.
Why don't you scramble your precious gang? They have been a source of worry since we opened up the bridge. And the way they cut that ribbon was a downright sacrilege.
But, Mr. Lang, you were astute. You prosecuted my friend, the Groot. Then for doing what he did, why the court fined him £5?
Did that please you, Colonel Campbell?
It was worth it, Mr. Lang.
Radio entertainers of the day often came from the stage. To name some names, Fred Blewett, Ada Reeve, Peter Dawson, Victor Gourier, Walter Kingsley, and Arthur Hemsley. These and many others were no strangers to the old powdered carbon microphones, which often required a good shake to make them work properly. Military bands kept popping up with remarkable frequency, and none was more popular than the ABC National Military Band, conducted by Stephen York. Symptomatic of the times was the great following enjoyed by community singing concerts. Crowds packed into town halls to sing lustily under the encouragement of compares like Frank Hatherley, Charlie Lawrence, and Bryson Taylor. Often there were guest singers, Dorothy Brunton, say, or Grace Quine. One of the sweetest voices belonged to Amy Ustinger.
Most things in life are plenty of, but what good friends?
The 30s all round Australia saw a lively succession of breakfast session personalities with enormous followings. In Sydney, 2GB at various times had Jack Davey, Jack Lumsden and Len Maurice. All of them found greater fame as nighttime performers. Len Maurice became one of the best known wireless singers of the decade. This is an ingenuous song he once recorded with the 2FC Studio Dance Orchestra.
Oh, Sydney, I love you. I love the smiling sky above you, and your neon sapphire blue. And wherever I may look, there's the crown of your look where your storied romance grew. I love every winding bay, they delight me every way, but most of all I love just you.
Jack Lumsden was a professional to his back teeth. His sessions of songs at the piano often included his own original compositions. No one who ever heard him could fail to recognize the voice of the Radio Rascal.
They called me Scallywag. The people always call me Scallywag. That's me, you see, because I'm never out of trouble. It's always been the same. No matter where I go, the folks, they all give me the name of Scallywag. Though I have got no money, Scallywag, I find that life is sunny, and though often I'm without a fang. But if there's fighting to be done, or a battle to be won, you'll find a good for nothing, tough and bluffing Scallywag. The people always call me Scallywag. That's me, you see, because I'm never out of trouble. It's always been the same. No matter where I go, the folks, they all give me the name of Scallywag. Though I have got no money, Scallywag, I find that life is sunny, and though often I'm without a peg. But if there's fighting to be done, or a battle to be won, you'll find a good for nothing, tough and bluffing Scallywag.
In popular orchestral music, the field was dominated by the dance orchestras, led by Cess Morrison, Cecil Fraser, and Howard Jacobs, to name a few, and especially by Jim Davidson.
Oh, my search will never cease for the girl on the Police Gazette, for the pretty young brunette on the pink Police Gazette. And above my mantelpiece, there's a page of the Police Gazette, with the pretty young brunette on the pink Police Gazette. I love to stop at my favorite barber shop, just to take another look at the girl that I haven't met yet. And my longing will increase for the girl on the Police Gazette, for the pretty young brunette on the pink Police
Gazette. Vocalist with the Davidson Orchestra then was Dick Cranbourne. Two FC listeners in the 30s had a great affection for Watto, the unpredictable personality who conducted the breakfast session. One morning in 1937, the ABC rebroadcast from London the lighting up of the fleet at the spectacular Spithead Naval Review. Alas, the BBC commentator was himself spectacularly lit up. And after the relay was hurriedly terminated by the BBC, Watto in Sydney came on the air to say,
"Time is 11 minutes to 8 Sydney time." Well, that, as you probably heard, was a description of the lighting up of the Royal Fleet Presents. A little bit of static about it, eh? Well, now, today is beautiful, folks. Today is beautiful, folks. Now that we've heard the fleet lit up, we haven't had that beautiful thought, have we? Well, here it is. half the failures in life arise from pulling in one's horse's head just as he's leaping.
The 30s saw the rise of several great serials, which, because they were so vastly popular, can be included in this look at radio variety. George Edwards, the man with a thousand voices, was responsible for some of them, notably the perennial Dad and Dave.
All right, Dad, that price will do me nicely. 1,500 quid is all I want, and you can have it on cash or terms.
Hey, Kerry, do you know what you're doing?
Well, he says he'll sell for 1,500 quid. It's dirt cheap at that price, Dan.
Too cheap. I couldn't let you sell at that price, Kerry.
Well, it's all I want, Dad. It's just the place for Dave when he marries and settles down.
Well, I'm not going to marry and settle down yet, Terry. We don't want the place.
Wait, why did you get me over here? Why did Dad say he'd give me 1,500 quid for it?
Did I say that?
Too right you did.
Now, listen, Terry, you don't want to sell that place. It's too good a proposition to sell at that price. Hang on to it a bit and, well, you'll get more money than that.
Well, don't you think I'm asking enough?
Well, I want you to look after yourself. You know, it's silly to take 1,500 quid.
Well, that's all I want. I thought you were a shrewd head, Dad.
I'm as shrewd as any farmer around about these parts.
Hey, listen, Terry. You go and see if you can give Mama Ann with the supper. You see, Dad and I have to have a private talk about this. It's business.
I understand. Well, you talk over the price, and I'll go and have a yarn with Mum. I'll guarantee she thinks it's cheap, and Mum knows values about here.
Hey, wait a minute. Now, don't you tell Mum that price.
Why not?
Oh, well, you know what it is. This is business between men.
Well, I'm going to ask Mum's advice about it. You've got no secrets from her, have you, Dad?
Of course I haven't. Who said I had any secrets from her? All right, you go and talk it over with her and leave Dave and me together.
Every housewife who's ever had a little gossip over the backyard fence must have felt some touch of affinity with that garrulous pair, Mrs. Harris and Mrs. Eags, even though the two chatty ladies were in real life two gentlemen, Ethel Tear and Dan Agar. Later on, Dan Agar created another unforgettable female character in the endearing shape of Mrs. Obbs.
It won't be a big wash, it won't be a big wash, it won't be a big wash. Hardly like it. It won't be a big wash, it won't be a big...
Mrs. Obbs! Mrs.
Obbs! Eh? Yeah, hello, Mrs. Bottomley. What are you doing standing outside at 5:30 in the morning?
Don't sing out, Mrs. Obbs. Come halfway over the road. Come on.
What are you doing out at this time in the morning?
Well, my Bottomley made me come out and wait for the paper, Mrs. Obbs. He goes real mad, you know, when it ain't here by the time his breakfast is ready. I'll be frightened to go inside if it ain't here in another 5 minutes or so. Are you going to Mrs. Chapley's now?
Yes. 5 o'clock, she said to be there. It's only 5:30 in here. To think that I got to go and do her washing for her.
Oh, that's a good job. That's a good job.
Yeah,
aye. Here's the paper boy now coming round the corner. Oh, that's a relief, Mrs. Obbs. Oh, well, here he comes. I'll get back to my place now and get the paper into my Bottomley. I might see you during the day, Mrs. Obbs.
All right. I don't know. Why don't her Bottomley get sick instead of my Obbs? I don't know, I'm sure. I wouldn't have to go and do this, then. It won't be a big wash. It won't be a big wash. Oh, well, here's her place. I wouldn't be surprised if she wasn't even up yet. It ain't my fault if she ain't up yet. I can say I was here at 4:00 and couldn't make no one here.
Dan Agar was another of the stage performers who settled into Australian radio. So, too, was Charlie Ford, star of The Minstrels on 3DB Melbourne. Charlie Ford was one of the most famous blackface comics in Australia, and he brought his immaculate timing and experience into the radio shows.
Why, say, Burns, which do you think are the best 10 years of a woman's life?
That's easy, boy. The best 10 years of a woman's life is between 29 and 30.
This is not rag time, but it should reach grandfather's shirt. A grandfather's shirt was too long for his son. To his grandson he then passed it on.
He said, I would like that shirt to be worn by someone when I'm dead and gone. Though it's frail in the tail, it will wear without fail. It's roomy, it's long, and it's wide. It's been worn, torn, from night till early morn, since the old man died. Oh, you'll hear Mother patching it, with bits of skirt she's matching it. It's been used, abused, but never yet refused, as the old man should. Tales of Hoffman. When the family went out camping, oh, we used it for a tent, though we felt it very drafty round the tail. The buttonholes were windows and the collar was a vent. Then somebody in it stuck a nail. Mum was cozy and warm, but she thought she struck a storm, for the nail, it was sharp and it hurt. From a dream came a stream, oh, they've got me in the seam of me grandfather's shirt. Oh, the wind, it did roar a bit, toward the early door of it. Mum, like Eve, went home in the sleeve of my grandfather's shirt. Mum had a stitch in the side. It's been used for a duster, it's been used for a towel, it's been used as a sail on a cruise. It went to the war with me dear old Uncle Hal, he used it often for a flag of truce. Last Christmas Eve, oh, we cut off half a sleeve, for Mother thought the linen, it was good. It was tough, rough, and had to do its stuff as a pudding cloth to boil the Christmas wood. Oh, we've made a bathing suit of it, and made a parachute of it. A flag, a gag, and it's been a water bag as grandfather's shirt. It's been an elephant skin in pantomime, and as a skirt to dance the serpentine. It's been a wrap, a cap, and it's been a baby's boot as the grandfather's shirt.
The beginning of the war brought back to Australia many of our performers who'd been trying their luck overseas. Their return helped Australian radio a lot. In 1940 came a new departure in wireless entertainment. Harry Pringle produced for the ABC the first star-studded audience participation variety show. It was called Out of the Bag. The lineup of talent to appear in this series included Peter Finch, Ron Randall, Kitty Blewett, and Neva Carr-Glynn. Wilfred Thomas was the compere, and one of the principal funny men, who had graduated from being the singing saxophonist with the Melbourne Symphony Dance Band in 1935, was Dick Bentley.
Private Smith was very much in love with Sarah. Every night you'd hear him serenade, 'cause Sarah is the cookie in the old brigade. Sarah, Sarah, ain't you coming out tonight? Sarah, Sarah, it's lovely in the pale moonlight. When we kiss and cuddle on the old back porch, tell your little brother not to shine his torch. Sarah, Sarah, ain't you coming out tonight? Yee-hoo! Ain't you coming out tonight?
Another member of the Out of the Bag cast was vaudevillian Mike Connors, who throughout the 40s commanded an affectionate following from the Prime Minister down for his genial good humour in the ABC breakfast session. After his first bout of serious illness, he broadcast a New Year's message to his friends.
Good morning, and I hope it's a bright and happy good morning for everybody in hospital and those who may be ill at home or anywhere else. I've had my first real illness, and I certainly can sympathize with every one of you, and I hope and pray that God will help you. Well, here I am, back on deck again, and I'm very thankful, because my doctors tell me that I was desperately ill. But thanks to their fine work, and to my nurses, and to my loving wife, who's just been an angel to me, and to your many good wishes and prayers, I'm feeling pretty good again. And I also want to thank our director of light entertainment, Harry Pringle, for his kind help and encouragement to my wife and family and myself, which I shall never forget. Oh, and by the way, remember those little sparklers I used to read to you, the words of advice I gave? Well, I've practiced them myself, and they certainly did help. And they'll help you, too. You just keep your spirit up. Think of nothing but getting well, and I'll give you my word that you'll come through. And for goodness sake, don't worry about getting thin. You know, I got so thin that one morning when the nurse was washing me, she washed my face, then turned down the covers and said, come, Mr. Connors, this is no time for jokes. Where's your body?
Another ABC variety show of the early war years was Searchlights Over London, written by John McLeod and starring Fred Blewitt. His famous daughter, Kitty, recalls for us what life was like for a small girl in the Blewitt household.
My father didn't want me to be a child performer in this business because often, rare cases such as, let's take Miss Temple, Shirley Temple, the greatest of them all, as a young lady, was a very sweet young lady, but I think that that talent drains out in time, you know, and my father thought that anyway about the child performers, so he let me do that little itty-bitty bit and a couple of other itty-bitty bits, then nothing else. So my home life was sitting at the table listening to my father and my brother saying, no, you don't do a gag that way, you do it this way. No, Dad, you're planting it too much. And I think that variety started when I was 2½ and at the table and coming home from school, they were still arguing about sketches.
Around this time, Paul Jacklin was producing Merry-Go-Round for the ABC in Melbourne. And on the commercials, one of the best programs was The Youth Show. The presiding genius behind this was Mark Makem, who had once been writing topical reviews for the ABC. Compared by Robin Ordell, The Youth Show molded the talents of performers like Bill Kerr, Pauline Garrick, Michael Pate, John Farson, Margot Lee, Colin Croft, and Joy Nichols. The Youth Show was one of the first successes of the newly formed Colgate-Palmolive radio unit, which was created to use up excess funds when the government froze profit percentages during the war. The unit had almost unlimited money at its disposal, employing at one stage an orchestra of 60 musicians and almost every radio variety performer of note in the country. Let's hear again some of the stars of the programs produced by the unit. For instance, each week, Compere Jack Burgess would introduce those two old-fashioned girls, Ada and Elsie.
Come on, Elsie, hurry up. We've just got to buy that land from Uncle Willie by marriage or they'll put you in jail for being a felony. This is the house. I only hope they're home, that's all. And Elsie, I think I'd better handle this alone.
Oh, but I...
Alone, I said. Now, do as I told you. You know what you are. I've asked the geologist... Are you listening to me?
Yeah.
You got your corsets on? I've asked the geologist to inspect the property and give us a report. As soon as the geologist comes, keep him there till I get home.
Well, how will I keep him there?
Well, just use your indiscretion. I don't care what... Now, off you go.
Well, can I get a taxi?
No, please? You can't get a taxi. There's no time to drive round past the YMCA.
Oh.
And Jack Davy seemed to be everywhere, now in quizzes like Rise and Shine, now playing sketches with people like Rex Wackador. He even matched his comedy on a few rare occasions with Royreen Moe, another comic who amused a whole new generation via the radio.
All our family are builders.
Are they?
Yes, there's Kit. She carries the grit and grammar. She brings the hammer and jewels. He brings the tools. And Rodney brings the hot and dick.
I know. He lays the brick.
No, he brings the peach.
Well, who lays the brick?
Me.
I thought Rick was safe.
Now that's Nick.
Oh. Look, listen to me. I don't want to hear any more about your family. Is that clear?
Thank you, lucky. I'm only trying to help.
Well, don't. And what are you looking so miserable about?
I lost me gimlet.
Well, never mind your gimlet.
I'm no good without the gimlet.
Well, where did you have it last?
I left it to Dimmy Pale.
Dimmy Pale?
He brings the knife.
Now, cut that out. When was your last job?
The day before.
The day before what?
The day before I lost me gimlet.
Oh! I'll break every bone in your body. What job were you on last?
We built a house at Williamstown in Melbourne.
Who's we?
Me and Edwin Stiles.
Edwin Stiles?
He brought the tiles.
Oh. I'll go mad. How long did take to build this place?
4 days.
4 days? That was quick.
Well, you see, I am me giblet.
How did you get on for materials? Cement?
Well, we didn't have any cement. We went up to the flour mills and bought 3 tons of self-raising flour.
Oh, I get it. You made a complete house from flour.
Yes, and we're the first family to live in a sponge cake.
Well, that is certainly unique.
And down the yard was a small scone.
Scone? What scone?
McGimlin.
In the unit's productions, first-class singers like Kathleen Goodall and Alan Code appeared regularly, and more humor was supplied by Dick Bentley, Hal Lashwood, the brilliant but eccentric George Blackshaw, the American, Wayne Froman, and the very Australian, Willie Fennell.
How are you, mate?
Willie?
Yes?
I suppose you know that the first duty of a valet is to understand a man's clothes.
Oh, yes, yes.
That's most important.
Yes, I know, Mr. Lasher. In other words, you can't be high and mighty in a red flannel nightie.
Yes, well, just remember who you're working for. My ancestors went back to King William.
What for, to apologize?
Yes. No! Anyway, I don't know much about your antecedents.
Well, there's no... Me waters?
Your antecedents. What's the history of your antecedents?
Well, I bought them in 1949. I've been wearing them ever since.
Oh. I was referring to your family. Are you related to aristocracy?
Oh, aristocracy.
Yes.
Oh, yes, my dad was a real aristocrat. Look, it was a real treat to see the way he'd crook both his little fingers while he drank his cocoa.
Willie, you mean the way he'd crook his finger. You only hold a cup with one hand.
Yeah, but Dad drank out of the saucer.
The unit used pop singers like Marjorie Steadiford, Pam Corrigan, Al Royal, Peggy Brooks, Terry Howard, Brian Lawrence, and Joan Clark. The regular compere was Jack Burgess. The orchestra was conducted by Montague Brearley. The regular scriptwriters were Alex MacDonald and Fred Parsons. The producer was Russell Scott. But I think the highlight of these broadcasts was Macaque Mansions with the old master again, Mo.
Stand back a few paces, Harry, because I've got to see you. And when I'm singing, I'm liable to splash. So baby, falso, la-ti-do. Why am I so sweet? I do not know.
Gee, Dad, I wish you wouldn't sing.
Why?
Every time you sing, I've got to go outside. Otherwise, the neighbors will think I'm sticking pins in you.
You won't say that, Harry, when I'm invited to sing with the new Italian opera company under the name of Signor Moe Macaccaroni.
There's no doubt about you, Dad. You sing like a bird.
Thank you, Harry. A skylark.
No, a buzzard.
Harry, come me. Already passed all our people.
Who's standing on the cat's tail?
How is that, then, Honorable Herbie? I'm practicing for the opera.
Peek-a-boo, everybody. It's little me, Spencer the garbage.
Ah, come in, Spencer. Complexion with you.
Mr. McPhee, did I just hear you bursting into glorious song?
Yes, Spencer. I was singing a very romantical number. How did it affect you? Did it make you shy?
No, but it made me horse shy.
Hey, what do you think, Spencer? Now he's practicing singing for the Grand Opera Company.
I am, too. I'm already practicing the 3 C. Middle C, high C.
Yeah, what's the other C?
Suck it and see. Hey, say, put that on your pizzicato and strum it.
Well, I wish I'd known, Mr. McPhee. I have a favorite air, but I didn't bring it with me.
That's what you think. Oh, dear. What a
this expense?
I'll walk beside you.
Oh, no, you won't.
My Uncle Haricot lost his voice once.
Did he?
So the doctor told him to take some pills on an empty stomach.
Did he, Spencer? What happened?
They rolled off.
On the musical front, one of the most charming vocalists of the war years was Gene Kirchy, who later made frequent appearances in the long-running ABC hit parade.
Although some people say he's just a crazy guy, to me he means a million other things. For he's the one who taught this happy heart of mine to fly. He wears a pair of job he has to do, I wouldn't have him change it for a king. An ordinary fellow in a uniform of blue, he wears a pair of silver wings. I'm so full of pride when we go walking, every time he's home on leave. Tomorrow brings. For I adore that crazy guy who taught my happy heart to wear a pair of silver wings.
Around this time, we were listening to singing groups like the Parker Sisters and the Lester Sisters, and getting pleasure from acts by Clifford Guest and Hari Dargi. There was Bob Dyer's House Party and Australia's Amateur Hour, compared by Dick Fair. By the way, Johnny O'Connor and Peggy Mortimer were just two performers who got their start on the Amateur Hour. Then there was the wacky humor of Ward Leopold. A regular performer of character comedy was George Nichols.
Was on a bonny summer's day, the sun was shining clear. I went away on a holiday and I met my dear wee dear. She looks as sweet, a perfect treat, her eyes were full of bliss. And ever since I kissed her face, I'm always singing this. Oh, she's the lass for me, oh, she's the lass for me. I've never seen another face that could ever take a place. She has locked my heart and stolen away the key. Hey, she is, yes, she is. She's the last for me. Her age is only 21 on the 6th of next July. I'd like to buy her something nice, but I don't know what to buy. I'd like to buy a tartan tie and a bunny wee tartan box. She's been so kind to me, she's knitted me 20 pairs of socks. She's the last for me. She's the last for me. Oh, I've never seen another face that could ever take a plate. She has left my heart and thrown away the key. She is, yes, she is. She's the last for me.
In January 1941 began the ABC's longest-running variety show, The Village Glee Club. I'm sure you'll recognize this voice.
Watch my beat, please. Thank you.
Yes, Colin Crane, who died only last year. In his early career, he appeared on the stage in musical comedy and recorded this song from The Maid of the Mountains.
At 17, he falls in love quite madly, with eyes of tender blue. At 24, he gets it rather badly, with eyes of a different hue. At 35, you'll see him flirting sadly with two or three or more. When he fancies his past love, it is then he meets his lost love, and he loves her as his
As the 40s went on, the ladies came to the fore in variety. Comedians like Fifi Banvar, Jenny Howard, Cicely Courtenage visiting Australia, and that troublesome child, Babe Scott.
I'm very, very Australian. Of course, my forebears were British, you know. Great-Granny was sent out for stealing some flour. What Great-Granny reaped, I'm a sow. Great-Grandpa was on the Endeavour, along with our dear Captain Cook. And of course, although he denied it and tried hard to hide it, he was commonly known as a crook. And I'm very, very Australian. I was reared in the country, of course. Oh yes, I know every inch of the dear old land, from Paddington up to the Cross. I know all the very best people. I'm really considered great nat. Of course, I've never been presented at court, but the old man's been sent up once or twice. Because we Fairdinkum really Australians. We take things as a matter of course. We don't take no notice. We don't think it's strange. The man puts his shirt on the horse. Because we don't ride the hounds as they do over there. In habit, Umbola. Nay, nay. We nick out to the doors on a Saturday night and we bung on a dinner each way. But I like living down here in Aussie. Under the old Southern Cross. We're proud of our harbour, our sunshine and surf, and our national game, pitch and toss. And gee, are we proud of our diggers, our boys in their khaki and blue. They won't make a fuss, but they'll look after us, and they'll make a good job of it too. Cause if there's trouble and things get a bit uphill, Australia will be there, my boys, to boom and ride, she will.
There were still a few of the old big personality radio announcers to be heard on the air. One was John Harper in Sydney.
I'd like to say good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon, boys and girls. I've been saying for, I think, 26 years, ever since I was a boy when I joined 2KY when I was 12, making me today 38 years of age. Says you, eh? 38 winters. What about the summers?
In Melbourne, the big morning personality was Nicky, who towards the end of his career trained a young man who's since been the darling of Melbourne television, Graham Kennedy. This is how Nicky and Graham sounded together.
I think we'd better go into our Graham. Funny story.
Right.
How are you, Canary?
I'm fine, thanks, Nick.
I have a little question to ask you, Canary.
You have a little question to ask me, Nick?
Yeah.
Tell me what the little question
is.
Which
has the most fun, rabbits or people?
I don't know. Which has the most fun, rabbits or people?
Rabbits.
Why rabbits?
Because there are more rabbits. I still finish it.
Oh. Why are there more rabbits, Nick?
Because rabbits have more fun than people.
Jim Gussie was now conductor of the ABC Sydney Dance Band, which was heard in Gussie's Tavern, Show Business, Press Gang, Fry Jest, and many other shows. In 1950, Arthur Askey starred for the ABC in a most successful comedy series. And in 1952, there was, remember it, the comedy show set in colonial Australia called Ticket of Leave. The Colgate-Palmolive radio unit had folded by the time the 50s began. financial restrictions on commerce at ease, and to quote one advertising executive, the unit had outlived its economic usefulness. But a new comedy series was going great guns on the Macquarie Network, written by George Foster and starring one of the great comedians of the Australian variety world, George Wallace.
Here's our boy from the bush, George Wallace.
Well, George, at long last you've actually met a young lady you feel you could get along with in the show, eh?
Yes, Myrtle Morgan. In my opinion, she's a terrific sort.
Good.
Mind you, she's a bit tall for me. She stands about 6'2".
Oh, don't be silly. She wouldn't be that tall at all.
Eh?
I said she wouldn't be that tall at all.
Tall at all?
Yes.
You got the stutters, the Irish. Oh,
she's not an Irishman. She's not a tall girl at all.
Well, I still say Myrtle Morgan is a tall girl. She'd be over 6 feet tall if they could straighten out her legs.
All right, so the poor girl's bandy. And I thought you told me you weren't going to sling off at this
girl. Not going to sling off. I'm not going to sling off at all. She's my type after all. She told me last night I had everything that Clark Gable has.
Oh, you've got everything that Clark Gable has.
That's right, except I've let it get a bit shabby, that's all.
Yes. Well, if you like the girl, don't refer to any of her physical detections. Be nice to her and don't start any arguments.
Who me start arguments? Look, I'm the most peaceful fella on the face of the earth. Do I strike you as a bloke that likes arguments, do I?
Oh, can a duck swim?
Huh?
I said, can a duck swim?
Well, of course a duck can swim. Even the smallest children in the street know that a duck is capable of doing a dog paddle.
Oh, all right, all right.
Ducks are very intelligent creatures. Just because their eggs aren't popular, don't think they haven't got more brains than a hen.
Oh, look, let's forget about ducks, shall we?
Well, you brought the subject up, and let me tell you, as a man who has had his own fowl yard, that a duck definitely is capable of propelling itself in the water.
All right, all right.
If you've ever poured water over a duck's back, you would realize that under the newer water...
Oh! I don't want to hear anything more about ducks here this afternoon.
Well, they definitely can swim. I've seen them. They have webbed hoofs.
Oh.
And a very fine sense of humor. If you've ever heard a duck make a wise quack...
Oh, will you forget about ducks, if you don't mind? Forget about them. Introduce the audience to Miss Myrtle Morgan, and no arguments with it, do you understand? No arguments with the girl.
Certainly. Next Saturday night. Now, now. Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to give the little girl a big hand. Introducing the new heroine of our show, Miss Myrtle Morgan, one of your own local Sheilas.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you, too, George.
Don't mention it. I haven't finished wrapping up yet, love. Ladies and gentlemen, this girl, this little local girl, I might say without fear of comprehension, is definitely one of the finest actresses in the country. One of the finest actresses in the country.
Here, here.
Mind you, they'd probably give her the bird in the city. But in the country, she's all right. She gets by.
Hey, I didn't like that. In my opinion, George Wallace, I've had just as much experience as you in the theater.
Ha, 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 ridiculous giggling. Yes.
Oh, yes. I'll have you know, I toured in the Latin countries. When I did a season in South America and Brazil, a songwriter wrote a special song about me.
What was it? South America, take it away.
Now, George.
Look, she started it.
Look, you're starting again. Now, you're getting into arguments. Why can't you be a peacemaker? Well, I won't stand for George.
Pardon me, but what am I supposed to be around here? I'm introduced and I'm left standing round on the stage while this barrel-tummied thing keeps talking about himself.
I beg your repulsive feminine pardon. I'd hate to be as skinny as you. If anyone looked at you, they'd think there was a famine in the country.
Yes, and if anyone looked at you, they'd think you caused it.
False laughter.
All right, now keep going. George, I'm going to ask Miss Morgan one thing. Tell me, Miss Morgan, do you think you'll be capable of acting very, very difficult parts?
Can a duck swim?
Now, I'm glad you are.
During the 50s, comedy on the ABC came from Bobby Lim, Hal Lashwood, Dick Bentley, and visitors like Richard Murdoch and Spike Milligan. By now, Bob Dyer and Jack Davey had emerged as the two leading radio personalities of the decade, each comparing rival quiz shows and outdoing each other in stunts and giveaways. A typical Dyer performance went like this.
Who's going to climb for it first, doll?
First tonight, Bob, is Petty Officer Tom Bushby.
Petty Officer Tom Bushby?
Yes, Bob, in the dental branch.
You do your petting in the dental branch? What's the nurse's name? Don't answer there. Well, that's wonderful, Tom. You're in the yank department.
Yes, Bob, in the yank department.
Oh, Tom, let's get started here, and your standby is...
Cyrene Middleton, Bob. Yes.
You're Miss Middleton?
Yes.
Well, honey, isn't that something? Have you always been a miss?
Very much a miss.
Well, Irene, we're glad to have you. You're a professional lady. Do you have some sort of a... call?
No, not now.
Not now?
No, Bob.
What did you do before that?
I was a stenographer.
Stenographer?
Yes.
You didn't get off with the boss?
Paper? No, evidently not.
No, evidently not. Well, Irene is as cute and as sweet as you are. I don't know how you did it. You watch old Tom. He's a... Are you married, Tom?
No, Bob, single.
Uh-oh. Irene, have you ever known any sailors, Irene?
Oh, I wouldn't like to say that, Bob.
You just don't like to tell fibs, do you, Irene? Well, anyway, you watch him and catch him if you can. That's a good one. Catch him if you can, Irene. And if he comes to lunch, you want to run a little faster, too. Here's your first question, Tom. Across what stretch of water did Leander swim to reach Hero? The Hellespont or the Straits of Gibraltar?
The first one, Bob, the Hellespont.
Hellespont, right or wrong?
Correct.
Correct it is, up to one step.
As the rival quizmaster, Jack Davey traveled Australia with his unit, headed by producer Perse Campbell, bringing entertainment to millions.
All right, here comes Miss Travard and Mrs. Brooker. Easy, this. I haul it up, snatch, grab, whatever you do, but make sure you get the money. What's a toddy?
A drink.
Because not only did she give the right answer, but she also took the money in a very ladylike way. What's this?
A member of the force, what?
Yes, that's right. Anything. And one got a bit of me, but I don't mind. I don't mind. I can take it. Hello, Mrs. Andrew.
David?
Mr. Andrew. Nice, easy one for you. How do you coddle an egg?
Oh, you coddle it. You boil it.
Oh, you do. You do. Well, I've never guessed it.
Good evening, Miss Quinn. Miss Quinn? The Quinn twins. Would you, Quinn, a little closer? Thank you. That's fine. What have I got for you? What is a quill? A pen, a feather. I don't care whether it's a feather or a mother. It makes no difference. You've got the money. Off you go.
The Jack was the greatest figure produced by radio in Australia. No one seemed seriously to dispute. After almost 30 years at the top of his profession, Jack Davey died in a Sydney hospital of cancer on October the 14th, 1959. Only a few weeks before his death, he recorded this song which he'd written. It's a poignant reminder of a remarkable man.
I spend the lonely daytime in a garden among the trees. As I look up to heaven, I thank the Lord for giving me things such as these. I spend the lonely evening with the moon and the stars above. As I look up to heaven, I thank Him too such things to love. For the life that I know, I can thank him so. For he taught me to live, laugh, and cry. And I send a prayer to him way up there for teaching me just how to die. I spend the silent midnight with its shadows upon the wall. On my knees in the darkness, I thank the Lord for eyes to behold the face of each friend until I'm told it's journey's end. Yes, I thank you, Lord, for the life you've given. And as the shadows softly fall, I will be ready when
death of Jack Davey, an era of Australian show business came to a close. The great days of the radio entertainers were over. A new medium, television, was making and breaking its own stars. But then, show business is like that. As one door closes, another opens, and new performers, eager, applause-hungry, and determined to succeed, are waiting in the wings, waiting to carry on the story of Fair Dinkum Australian variety. The closing theme of the George Wallace Show seems to sum it all up.
Now the show is over, we head for the train. Another time tomorrow, we might to remain. We got to say goodbye now, till we meet again. Where the Wallace Show's in town.
Fair Dinkum Variety was written by Charles Graham and John West. Records in the program came from the archives of the ABC, the Macquarie Broadcasting Service, and stations 3DB, 3UZ, and 2KY. The narrator was John West, and Fair Dinkum Variety was produced in Sydney by Charles Graham.